Good morning, everyone. It is Thursday, September 28th, 2017, and this is a game day version of the Packers podcast. We don't really have too many of these, but because it is a Thursday night game, we are giving you a Thursday morning podcast. My name is Michael Cohen, and I'm here with fellow beat reporter Tom Silverstein. Tom, are you ready on a short week? How's the shoulder?
It's pretty sore. I have not recovered as well as I would like. I think I practiced too hard this week.
But, so are you know, questionable? Are you doubtful?
No, I'm 100% probable that, the big question is, will I make it through the entire game?
Well, can the live blog thrive on a short week or does it suffer?
Boy, I don't know. I may have to bow out in the third quarter. We'll see. I'm going to try to tough it out. I'll try to tape up my fingers and see if I can make it through.
So once again, the injury report seems to be the story for the Green Bay Packers. And late Wednesday afternoon, they distributed their final injury report of the week. And on that were two relative surprises, and that was David Bakhtiari being doubtful and Brian Bulaga being doubtful. So once again, let's play musical chairs at left tackle.
Yeah, man, pretty shocking, actually. I thought one of those two guys was going to be available.
I agree.
And they are really, really in a pinch. I don't know what they do. I really don't. I guess, our logic would be that Justin McCray would move to left tackle. But, I mean, they don't have any tackles. They literally don't have any tackles. I don't know any of those guys play tackle anywhere except for Adam Pankey.
And Ulrich John.
Oh, yeah, and Ulrich John, yeah, who's been here for 2 days. And probably can figure out the snap count, but little else. They may be able to do some basic stuff with John, but
I'm not buying it. I don't think you play that guy 48 hours after he gets here.
I don't know. Maybe they go like a jumbo, use him as like a tight end or something. But I think we're going to see a lot of double tight end formations. I think Martellus Bennett is going to be the, sort of the adjunct left tackle, an adjunct right tackle, something like that. He's going to have to really block a lot. And both the tight, him, Kendricks, and Rodgers are going to have to help out.
We've seen some pretty depleted units in just the short time that I've been here. There were the cornerbacks last year, the running backs last year. I can't even remember what it was the first year. Oh, no, it was cornerbacks again the first time I was – my first season here, because that's when they called up Herb Waters for that playoff game in a last-ditch effort. This is really crazy to me that if you go back to the beginning of training camp, they're down their top five tackles.
Right.
You've got Bakhtiari, Bulaga, Murphy, Spriggs, and Don Barclay.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen a tackle position this thin before.
I haven't either. And when you went into camp, you thought, oh, it's a pretty solid position. I mean, you can't really argue with who they kept. And Spriggs had a bad camp, but Murphy had a good camp. And then all of a sudden he's gone for the year. So I don't know. This is going to be a test of their mettle. It's going to be a test of McCarthy's coaching ability and his staff, because you can't put Rodgers on an island out there and leave him, susceptible to getting hit. I don't know what they're going to do.
Now, we'll talk more about the specific matchups in a few minutes, but I got to think Vic Fangio is ready to unleash on this offensive line. It's a pretty good defense to begin with, and then, you take away any sort of stability at tackle, and it's the potential to be ugly.
Well, if I'm him, I don't necessarily come after them. I go with my front four, and in their case, it's a front three. I mean, they're a 3-4 defense. But, use your four-man rush, five-man rush, and play coverage. And let those guys try to eat up. That's the best way to win a game, is if you can get pressure with four guys, and then you can drop seven, and you make it really hard on Rodgers, because you've got to take those receivers away, especially the short stuff. So if I'm Fangio, I don't do anything fancy. I just come at them and let those guys win, you know, at the line of scrimmage.
The only thing I wondered is if he would bring five on a decent number of plays, simply because if you bring somebody off the edge, an extra person, then Bennett can't really help too much. If there's two guys coming at him, he would have to take one-on-one, and then, you know, Pankey or McCray, whoever, gets the other guy one-on-one. But no, I agree with you. I mean, we've seen the last couple of years that a lot of the teams that have had the most success against Rodgers get pressure with their front four or front three and then play with seven or eight back.
Mm-hmm. And cover two and,
yeah,
and take away short stuff.
Why is it that you think Rodgers gets a little uncomfortable when he seems to have so much time in the pocket? You know, he's great at extending these plays, but oftentimes when it seems like he has all day, he kind of looks a little uncomfortable.
I think that's because when you have all day, it usually means your guys are covered, because you've gotten rid of the ball by then if you haven't. I think his receivers are better against man-to-man than they are against zone, and that's part of it. He likes to throw on the run. He's really good at it. He won't throw the ball unless he knows the guy is open, so that's often why he's holding the ball back there. If he likes throwing on the run, boy, he's going to love Thursday night.
Yes.
He's going to be on the run the whole night.
The one area that I think could be sort of, I guess I don't know, is what the Packers do with the running backs, because that's going to be an area of protection too. So how much do you trust Montgomery's pass pro? I mean, we've talked about it. It hasn't been great. So do you go more Ripkowski? Do you go more Jamal Williams? I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, you might have to go a little bit more. Well, here's the thing. You're going to have to go – you're probably going to have to play double tight end a good portion of the game. And if you don't put someone who can threaten the defense like Montgomery, then you're really taking a lot out of your offense. And so I think they have to play Montgomery a lot and just hope that he can – add protection. But more than anything, it's going to be checked down Thursday, because Rodgers is going to have to, you know, take what he can get from Chicago and get rid of the ball, and Montgomery's going to be a big part of that.
Dink and dunk and dink and dunk.
Yeah.
And another big part of that, the return of Randall Cobb. I got to think this is going to be the potential for him to catch a lot of quick little passes.
Well, it could if Rodgers has time to scramble. You know, Cobb's really good on the scramble plays. They kind of missed that against Cincinnati. They didn't really have that. And that's what his expertise is. But I don't know how long Rodgers can, you know, stay alive back there. It could just be a it could just be a race to the quarterback.
And another thing to remember, too, is, as you pointed out, if they're going to play a ton of double tight ends, they're not going to have a ton of receivers on the field. If you have two tight ends and a back, that only leaves you with, what, two receivers?
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be Nelson and Adams, you know, the majority of the game. So that'll be something to keep an eye on as well. I don't know what they do with this running game, really. Can you run behind this line?
Well, you could probably – well, you know, Justin McCray's not a bad run blocker.
I agree.
You know, he's a tough dude. Pankey, I just don't know anything about him if he's the one who ends up starting at right tackle. Well, we haven't seen him play enough to
at
really
left guard
know.
He was decent against the Rams in that last exhibition game.
Yeah.
But he didn't look good at tackle when they used him at tackle
no,
in camp.
No, he didn't. I just can't. Can you imagine Leonard Floyd going up, Pernell McPhee, Will Young going up against Adam Pankey all game long?
I don't know. I've never seen anything like it. I
haven't either.
It's bad. And, let's continue down the injury report here for the offense. So, you know, Bakhtiari, we mentioned, out most likely. Bulaga, out most likely. They get Cobb back. And then Montgomery drops off the injury report.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about his workload a little bit. I'm interested to see how much longer he can keep playing 90% of snaps. I mean, the guy is built like nobody else in that locker room. We've talked about his physique and how chiseled he is. And he might say that he feels great, and he might feel great. But The season is a marathon. It's not a 100-yard dash, and I just think if he keeps doing this, he's either going to get hurt or by November he's going to run a 4.940.
I didn't think he looked that great last game. I thought he looked a little slow, little sluggish. You know, maybe it was the heat. I don't know, but he didn't have the same kind of juice behind his legs. I really think that Jamal Williams, and I'm still going to say that either Mays or Jones has to get – they got to try him at least. They've got more – they got a lot of juice in their legs. I'd like to see them play.
So you wrote a piece that was in today's paper, and it might have been published late last night, about the tight end position and Martellus Bennett. Now, I think his role probably changed since you decided to pick this topic.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, exactly.
And so what – you know, aside from – you know, chips and salsa, which he's going to be doing all game long. Chip here, chip there, chip there.
Yeah.
How do they? What was the onus of the piece?
Well, the gist was that Martellus Bennett's not giving them what they got from Jared Cook, and what Jared Cook gave them was something very important to that offense, which is a down the field threat. And I think they still have that ability with Lance Kendricks. And so my point was that, until Bennett starts to play like the guy they think he is, I think they need to incorporate Kendricks more. I think we saw a little bit of what he could do on Sunday against Cincinnati, that the guy's still got some speed. He's got some wiggle. He can, you know, he drew a 33-yard pass interference penalty on a go route down the sideline. I think they need to explore using him more. And maybe they will just out of the function of not having two tackles on Thursday night.
Do you get a sense for how the blocking compares between Kendricks and Richard Rodgers?
Well, between Kendricks and Richard Rodgers?
Because if they're going to play two tight ends, you got to have one of those guys. And I don't think either of them is a very good blocker, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, I've never thought Richard Rodgers was a good blocker.
No, he throws his shoulder.
He's terrible, yeah. Kendricks, I think, tries. I think he can do it. He's not Martellus Bennett when Martellus Bennett wants to really block. But I think he's good enough. There's only so many really good blocking tight ends in the NFL now. And, you know, we saw, I think back to Cincinnati's Croft trying to block Josh Jones that one time, and Jones just ran through him like he was nothing. So you just don't see these blocking tight ends very much. And this is where maybe Kendricks lines up in the slot, you know, or they play two tight ends and they play games with it. They force Chicago to play maybe a base defense with that, and then they split those guys out and try to throw to them quickly, something like that. I think they're going to have to
use them to dictate coverage as much as they can. When I look at what the Packers did in this last game against Cincinnati, a lot of the success that they had, you know, in the passing game were these short little passes, and that was essentially what sort of we started to see in the second half of last season before the offense eventually clicked into gear late. Do you think any of these receivers wonder about why they don't do these short passes from the start in every game? And the reason I bring that up is because I think it was at the Atlanta game when Devontae Adams was talking in the locker room, and he basically said, you know, we started to get some things going with the short intermediate passing game late in the game, and moving forward, we just need to do that from the start. And I wondered if that was him at all being a little frustrated that, you know, every beginning of a game seems different under McCarthy. There seems to be a different goal on the first 20 plays, and then it changes from there on.
He's very much believes in matchups, attacking schemes. He believes in using the week to come up with a game plan and sticking with it. Figures that they put in all the work during the week, why not use it? And I sort of agree with that. I think halftime is a time for big adjustments. I don't know. Sometimes you feel like your matchups with opposing corners are good, and you want to push the ball down the field. Sometimes your pass protection stinks, and sometimes as a coach, you're slow to realize that, or you're reluctant to give help. But I don't know. I don't know if you can. It also depends on how the opposition is playing you, too.
I remain puzzled by the fact that the last two games, on the first drive, the Packers score a touchdown each time, and then there seems to be this second quarter to the mid-third quarter doldrums, and then it sparks to life in the fourth. So, I mean, I know that McCarthy probably scripts at least some concepts, if not the whole, you know, gamut of plays that he wants to run, mm-hmm. but I don't get why there's such a drop-off in the middle of these games. They're good at the beginning, and they fight their way back at the end. It's weird to me.
Yeah, it is. It is. Opposing teams make adjustments, and maybe that's part of it. Maybe the Packers are just still finding themselves. You know, they've added some pieces with Bennett and Kendricks, and
the O-line probably plays into it too.
Yeah, the O-line does play into it. What can you get away with early on? What can't you get away with? You know, they're still learning under, you know, with Montgomery. That's a new thing for them. So I think there's a lot of changes going on that, you know, if this is the problem in week 8 or 9 or 10, then it's going to be a season-long problem. Right now, I'm willing to say, okay, let's see how it plays out.
The last week when we talked to the assistant coaches, I asked Ben Sermons about how much of a gap there is receiving-wise from Montgomery to the rest of the running backs. Mm-hmm. And predictably, he said there was a big one. You know, of course, Montgomery used to be a receiver. And so I started thinking about whether or not in that vein, Montgomery's versatility works against him when it comes to getting any sort of a rest. Because McCarthy knows how valuable Montgomery can be both when the ball is in his hands as a runner or a receiver, mm-hmm. and as Rodgers often talks about, as a coverage indicator. Whereas you're not going to get those same types of looks if it's Aaron Jones or Jamal mm-hmm. Williams, because they don't have to treat him the same way.
Right.
And so that makes me think that part of the reason Montgomery stays on the field is, yes, they want that versatility, but also they want the coverage indicator. And that's huge for them, I think.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I think that they do gain a lot from that. And they like the option of going with an empty backfield.
Exactly.
And trying to see how the opposition's going to match up to that. It's not a bad deal. I just think at some point, though, you gotta find out what those other guys can do. And I don't know. They're not running the ball much. What, Montgomery has like 41 carries in three
second,
games.
For the whole team, it's the second fewest rushing attempts in the league.
Yeah, and he hasn't hit 20 in a game yet.
No,
like he's
19.
He's got 19, 10, and 12.
Yeah. So we'll have to see how that plays out. Let's switch over to the defensive side of the ball, where there are some questionable players. We'll run down the injury report. It looks like they're going to have Kentrell Bryce back mm-hmm. with the groin injury that has at least healed enough for him to get back onto the field. It looks like Mike Daniels is a game-time decision. I believe that's what he said in the locker room on Wednesday. He's questionable with the hamstring. Quentin Dial is off the injury report with a chest problem, so he's back. Devon House is ruled out with a quadricep injury. Nick Perry is questionable, and he was not totally optimistic about playing. He thinks a lot of it will come down to how much pain he can tolerate inside of that club. And then Jake Ryan is back after a concussion and hamstring injury. So when you look at the defensive line, how enormous would it be for them to get Mike Daniels back after watching a game without Mike Daniels last week?
Oh, it would be enormous, especially against this team, because Chicago just pounded the ball on Steelers and did a great job of it. Yeah, they absolutely need Mike Daniels back. They also don't need him to re-injure his hamstring and be out for 4 more weeks, so they got to be careful. I have a feeling they will be careful and they won't play him, but, you know, who knows? He brings so much to the table that I don't know. It'll be a tough night trying to stop the Bears' run game without him.
Do you agree that, you know, of the three big pass rushers for the Packers, so you look at Nick Perry, Clay Matthews, and Mike Daniels, that, you know, we've already talked about the difference when you know, one of those guys is out. You know, so let's say, like this game, if Perry were not to play and Daniels did play. Mm-hmm. But I think there's even just a huge difference going from one of those guys playing, just Matthews, to two. Because if you take away, you know, if Matthews is the only pass rusher that they have out there that they can count on, I just don't think you can generate anything because he's going to draw a double team. You noted it, I think, in your story. I can't remember if it was you or somebody else that said that, you know, Matthews drew the majority of the double teams against the Bengals because that's all there is there. So if they can just get two of those three guys back, I think it makes a sizable difference.
Yeah, you need to have someone opposite. Now, Ahmad Brooks gave him a little bit of something.
That's true.
But I think he's still working his way into this defense, and I still think he's probably a part-time player. Perry can take advantage in one-on-ones, and so it's hard to determine which guy you're going to double-team off of that. And, of course, when you have Daniels in there, then you got three guys you got to worry about. So, yeah, it does make a difference when two of those guys are gone.
I was talking to Perry in the locker room on Wednesday, and he sort of went through the pros and cons of his injury and everything. And this was so he has to wear the club on his right hand, which is his dominant hand, but it's not the hand that wore the club last year.
Right.
As you helped me put together the chart earlier this week, if Perry plays, it will be the 21st time that he wears a club in 70 career games or 71 career games. It's nuts. And basically he said that, you know, he's comfortable with playing with a club at this point. He understands how to manipulate it and maneuver it, and he thinks that there are some subtle benefits from an intimidation factor, if you want to buy that.
Yeah, if you want to club guys.
Yeah, if you want to go out there. I remember last year I asked him the same thing, and he said he's heard stories of players with clubs that go out, and you know how a lot of times with outside linebackers you'll see him swat the hands? Mm-hmm. He said that he's seen players with clubs swat high into the face mask on purpose, mm-hmm. just to sort of, you know, send a message. And he didn't say he was going to do that, and I don't know if any offensive tackle really fears it. But he said, hey, I've got something that's bigger than anything they have.
Yeah.
So.
Did he say how he broke his finger?
So he said that he doesn't remember exactly when it happened and mm-hmm. that he was on the first drive of the game and all of a sudden he felt soreness in his finger. So he went over to the sideline. He didn't think it was that bad. He taped it up and he went back and played. And then it wasn't until, you know, the x-rays or whatever scans that he had that he realized it was significant. But he said he can't pinpoint exactly when it happened. But he said he knows for a fact it was not throwing a, you know, the two-handed punch that they throw at the line of scrimmage. So he doesn't know if he hit a helmet or if somebody kicked his finger in a pile, something like that.
Wow.
But he said it wasn't from taking his two hands into somebody's chest.
And which finger is it?
He wouldn't say.
You wouldn't say you couldn't tell from
he put his hands behind his back during the interview. So we didn't have a chance to see.
I did see from afar that it looked to me like it was on the outside.
Okay.
I saw a little splint he had on. That's why I asked, because I wanted to see if what I saw was right, if you would say it. But I think I did see something right on the pinky finger, so who knows? It really doesn't matter. It's in a club.
Right.
It doesn't matter what finger it is.
I kind of got the sense that he might not play. And, you know, and it's not necessarily because he left the possibility open. It's just that there was no hint of excitement in his face when talking about it. And the fact that he brought up having to deal with all that pain.
Yeah, he's a week or so
off surgery.
I mean, for anybody who's had surgery for anything, having to play right after that is not really ideal.
No.
I mean, even having been under anesthesia, I'm assuming he was.
I would think so.
Maybe it was a local, I don't know. But whatever the case, it's like, yeah, I wouldn't expect him to play.
And so basically what he said is the misconception about the club is that it's not like any sort of a cement object where he can't feel anything on the inside of it. He said there's a lot of pain on the inside of that.
Sure, yeah, it's getting jarred and
exactly.
stuff, right?
And so it's a matter of, A, will the doctors clear him, and B, how much does he want to push through this pain and risk, you know, messing up what they just did? So I kind of get the sense that he won't play, but, you know, you never know. Now, what do you think about how things play out in the rest of the defense? They have Bryce back, so where do you think we see Josh Jones or Morgan Burnett or any of these guys in the positions they played last week against the Bengals?
I think it'll be exactly the same. They'll test it out, see how they can, whether they can stop the run with those guys. I think they'll go with Bryce at safety, Josh Jones at nitro position, and Burnett in the slot again. And I think they'll try to go after Glennon because and they'll run blitz a ton because they don't really need to worry that much about Chicago's receivers.
No. Their leading receiver is a running back.
Yeah. I mean, they had one catch. You know, I think that's what they have to worry about the most is the backs. And, you know, having those safeties gives you a chance to make those guys block. You know, if Tariq Cohen, if he's in the game, I'm blitzing his side every time, you know, and making him block. So I think there is some advantage to playing that. It's just that if they strap it up and start running right up the middle on them, then Packers could have a problem.
Well, that's the thing about the Bears, too, is that a lot of their running yards that they rack up are from really wide plays. They run the stretch play really wide, and then it's one cut vertically up the field. And so, I mean, this is a legitimate running team. They had, what, over 200 yards rushing against the Steelers?
Yes.
And
yes.
That was with Jordan Howard playing through a bum shoulder.
Yeah. And then the two guys had all those receiving yards, too.
And
so.
I think they can run on this defense. I think Atlanta showed it with two tailbacks that are different styles completely than what the Packers are going to see. Then the Bengals showed it at times with Mixon and Jeremy Hill. And I think you can run on this defense. And so it comes down to that trade-off of speed in the secondary versus run-stopping.
Right.
And at what point do you think Capers would throw in the towel? I mean, would he make that choice real early, first couple drives?
I think they'd try to make some adjustments. But if that first series they're, you know, knocking off 8 yards a carry, then they got to make a change and go to two inside linebackers to start. They got to probably bring in Jake Ryan and go with Martinez and Ryan and then figure out what they're going to do with Josh Jones.
Is there any chance they, now that Jake Ryan is back, he plays alongside Josh Jones? Or do you think that's Blake Martinez's job given how well he played?
I think it's Martinez's job to lose. I think he played pretty well. He must have read my story about him needing to be replaced by Matthews or Brooks. I still want to see whether he can hold up over the course of the season. But he played pretty well. Yeah, I just – Jake Ryan gives them a change of pace. You know, he's probably a little bit better just standing in there and slugging it out. But Martinez was very active.
What do you think teams will do, if anything, in response to Josh Jones and the way he played last week? Because, again, nobody had film on the guy. Now they see what he's about. Because I have one theory based on something Clay Matthews said a couple weeks ago. But I want to ask you, what do you think – teams will do against him to try and exploit? Go ahead.
Oh, well, I think they're going to try to isolate him in coverage. You know, I think they're going to try to get a back on him, somehow make him cover and find out whether he can cover, because he's pretty much a straight line guy, and nothing wrong with that except when it comes to coverage. So that's what I think, where they'll test them.
I agree. And then the other thing that I think teams will try and do to run on this defense is something that the Bengals did, and then Matthew sort of mentioned it. He said that when Cincinnati had some of its best gains, it was when they got big guys on small guys. And I didn't really know what he meant until I went back and watched the film. But some of the biggest boom and bust plays for the Bengals were when they pulled linemen and were able to get a guard on Josh Jones or a tackle on Blake Martinez, and those guys couldn't slice in. Now, there were other times where Martinez and Jones beat those guys to the punch. And so, you know, with the Bears having this preference to run really wide, I wonder if they will try and find ways to get some of their bigger linemen onto Jones and Martinez to clear them out the way the Bengals did.
Yeah, I don't know if they're up to running all that power stuff that the Bengals did.
True, good point.
You know, you can move in the zone stuff. You can move guys, but more than likely, I mean, you have to go to really a power concept to pull guys and you know, you got to take care of the backside and all that kind of stuff. So I think the Bears will try to just go with what they have. And I'm sure they feel like it's good enough to for them to run the ball on the Packers. If they can do it against the Steelers, why can't they do it against the Packers?
No, I totally agree. When you look at the secondary, what do you expect from Kevin King, Demarius Randall, Quentin Rollins? I mean, there's no marquee receiver to take out of this game, so is this an opportunity to maybe test one side for King and one side for Randall and see how it goes rather than tracking somebody?
Yeah, there's not really a guy that you feel like you have to shadow.
Right.
You know, Kendall Wright was, I guess, is sort of their number one receiver. Not really the type you want to match up with. You know, maybe Devontae Thompson is the guy they could match up with, but I don't think you need to. I think this is one of those ones where you play man and you just bring the heat and you count on Kevin King being able to shut down his guy and you count on Randall being able to cover his.
You think Rollins will get a chance outside at all, or will it just be Randall? I mean, I just wonder what goes through Rollins' mind, you know, at this point in terms of how does he get on the field without an injury?
He's bounced around mentally, you know. Remember, he's coming into camp. He's the number one corner.
Yep.
And then he's not, and then he's the number one slot guy, and then he's,
and then
not,
he's not.
And now he's
nothing.
A special teams player.
That's all he is, a special teams player. I don't really see how he gets on the field without injury at this point.
I don't either. You know, unless they feel like the matchup is better on one of the sides with him than Randall.
But I guess he could play dime, but even still.
Could, but, you know, they sort of go with Jones and
Bryce.
Jones is kind of the dime.
Right.
You know, Jones and Burnett are the slot guys.
And then Bryce stays deep.
Joe Thomas in the middle, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't really know what they do with Quentin Rollins at this point moving forward. And, you know, remember, we're going to be asking the same questions about Demarius Randall whenever House comes back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a chance he's not going to be on the field either.
That's right.
It's very weird how things have flip-flopped in the secondary. Mm-hmm. Anything else you want to talk about matchup-wise with these two units?
I would say it'll be interesting to see if the Packers can test the Bears deep. It's not going to be easy with the tackles they have, but with some play action, maybe they can put, you know, press the safeties a little bit. Quentin Demps isn't going to be playing. There may be some yards to get there, but they're going to be hard. That's all. You know, McCarthy, he's going to come out and he's going to go deep right away.
Of course.
You know, just to test them. But it'll be interesting. Oh, the other thing I want to look at, or what's really going to be interesting, is how are these teams holding up in the fourth quarter after having played an overtime game?
Yep.
Now they're in the 3-day rest. This could be really crappy football. You know, Thursday night games have been. The 49er Ram game was exciting because it was two lousy teams running up and down the field scoring points.
Yeah.
But, you know, it has all the makings for just a crappy game.
I'm looking forward to seeing Justin Vogel against Tariq Cohen. I think Vogel had a really strong game this past week. I was reading our former colleague, BobMcGinnFootball.com, and of course he's obsessed with hang times.
Of course.
And he had Vogel with, I think, 4 punts of over 5 seconds hang time against Cincinnati.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Now, Tariq Cohen has proven to be a dangerous return man already in just a couple games as a rookie in his rookie season. And if Vogel messes around with hang time or shanks one or anything, they've got a really dangerous weapon back there. So whether or not the rookie punter can replicate a strong performance is something that that I'd like to keep an eye on.
Did you notice that he changed his number?
Vogel?
That he's number 8 now?
He went from 5 to 8?
Yes.
Why?
Yes. Well, it's the Paul Hornung thing, I think. Because Hornung was 5, and they gave it to him during. And I meant to ask this of someone with the Packers. I'll have an answer on this for our next podcast. But he did go to number 8, and I think it has to do with the Hornung thing, because the Packers won't retire Paul Horning's number, I guess because of the gambling thing, maybe? I'm not sure exactly
I don't know.
Why. But he wore it during camp, and now he's wearing number 8. So I'm going to try to find out about it. I'm going to do some investigative reporting and try to find out about that.
All right, so we've come to the prediction portion of this podcast.
We have to predict?
You have to predict the winner of the game and who plays left and right tackle.
I did that already.
Yeah, but things have changed since we filed our online predictions. Who are you taking?
Well, knowing what I know about the tackles. If I could do it over again, I'd pick the Bears. I really would. I don't know how the Packers can get through that. You know, I keep saying it's going to be McCray and Pankey, but I think McCarthy's got something up his sleeve, and I don't know what it is. I really don't know. You know, I don't know what other option he can do, but maybe Jari Wright can play right tackle. Or Jari Evans can play right tackle. You know, who knows? We'll find out. I mean, then he could put Lucas Patrick at guard and McCray at left tackle. Maybe could put, I don't know if Jari Evans could play left tackle, but
Did you see Jari Evans try and lead that screen with Montgomery? Yeah, I don't think he's got speed for that.
Yeah. I just don't know. I mean, this is the guy who played Josh Sitton at
left tackle against the Vikings. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
So I did the same thing. I picked the Packers before we saw the injury report, and I would, if I could do it again, I would pick the Bears too. I think they're gonna go with the same plan, and this is just a hunch. I don't know anything. This is just me spitballing, but I think they're going to kick Lane Taylor out to tackle and play Adam Pankey at left guard, and then you play McCray at right tackle, because Pankey did look good at left guard in the final exhibition game. True. Granted, it was an exhibition game. And don't forget, I mean, there's a chance we could see Lucas Patrick, too. This is a guy that's nobody's really talking about for obvious reasons, but he's the other guy that's been here for a while that could be plugged in if necessary.
Right, right. And then, you know, there's always the Martellus Bennett thing, you know.
Could Martellus Bennett play left tackle?
Yeah.
Okay, if they decided to play him at tackle, would you rather play him at left or right? You got to play him at right, right?
No, I'd want him at left because he's, you know, you need a quicker guy there. You want your road grader on the right side.
Okay.
More often. That's what you would want, but you know, neither of us is predicting Ulrich John is going to play.
No, I just don't see it.
Man, I don't know. Maybe they can carve out some kind of really basic role for him. And you know, he's playing at Arizona. They have a pretty complex offense. I don't know.
I don't either. But we'll have to find out Thursday night, later today. Don't forget about the live blog. Tom, you'll be there.
That's right. That's right. I'll be there with all the updates. We'll be analyzing all the tackle play and everything else.
And we'll be up late tonight to record another podcast that should be available first thing Friday morning. So until then, we will talk to you guys soon. Not just stepping stone. Met your girl, your